the first time in the 21st century, there is not a single flying fox in Singleton's Burdekin Park. Seriously, after years of public debate, council discussions, they've just kind of disappeared. So where have they gone? Well, their new home isn't too far from the park at Dunnerley along the banks of the Hunter River, but why have they made the shift? Dr. Karen Parry-Jones from the University of Sydney has been working with council and community and kind of working with the flying foxes for a few years. Karen, good morning.
Good morning, Kia.
What has happened? Where have the flying foxes gone?
Oh, they've gone onto the river just down behind the shopping centre, and they were there just before Christmas in quite large numbers. So they've left Burdekin at the moment, anyway.
Do we know why? Big question.
Look, flying foxes have had a whole change in their behaviour over the last 20, 30 years. It used to be that they'd get into a colony site and they'd be there forever. You know, some of the colony sites I checked out way back in the 80s used to go back well into the start of European settlement in Australia. So possibly they were there a long time before that, maybe even into the Dreamtime, who knows. Mm. But since global warming's been heating up, since our level of habitat destruction has been increasing to tremendous rates, they've changed their behaviour. And it's only happened in the last 20 years. It's actually really phenomenal because species don't tend to change their behaviour.
Yeah.
But flying foxes have. They've moved their colony sites. They've moved their distribution. And it's probably all linked to the desire to survive.
I was going to say, is it that survival instinct? They're looking for literally greener pastures, better places to live, to raise their families.
Certainly moving from one colony site to another has definitely been linked to moving closer to food supplies. You know, if food's in short supply because of habitat destruction, et cetera, you know, it's a good idea to reduce the amount of energy you use to get to the food. Mm. So if you don't have to fly 50 kilometres to your food supply, but you can set up a colony right next to it, you're winning. And that's what seems to have been happening in a lot of these new colonies. They're closer to their food supply. Yeah. And that's, you know, in many respects, you know, wonder, okay, Burdekin Park is now empty of flying foxes, but they haven't been there for years and years and years and years and years. I mean, they weren't there in the 80s or 90s when I was working on my PhD. And the story then was that their original site, which was near a mine, had been cleared. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That was just the rumour that was going around. But now they haven't moved that far away. You wouldn't think they were that closer to food supply. So, frankly, we don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering as well, if you look at the difference, even just in the last year, of what that river might look like now that we're not in drought. It would be lush at the moment, Karen.
Well, it was phenomenal. When we had the rain just recently, it was almost running in flood. It didn't look anything like the, you know, sort of dry water course that it was last year, for example. So, yes, the conditions have changed. So that may well have something to do with it. And frankly, who would like to live in Burdekin Park if you're a flying fox? You know?
Yeah, because let's talk about that. It wasn't the ideal habitat for them. That was kind of where everyone was a bit confused. They were like, all right, so why are you actually here, though? What is it that you love about this space? Because we can't really see what that is on the surface.
No, we never found that out.
They're not very talkative.
No. And anyone looking at that colony site, you'd have to say, you know, surely you can find somewhere better. You know, flying foxes like forested colony sites. They like sites with multiple layers of canopy. They like nice, damp, wet sites, preferably in a valley. So heaven only knows why they chose Burdekin in the first place.
Does this mean that they could return?
Well, yeah, anything's on the cards at the moment. As I said, we don't know why they went there. We don't know why they left. So we certainly can't say they won't come back.
What are you fascinated by? You've been working with these creatures for a really long time. What continues to amaze you by flying foxes? Because they can get a pretty bad rap depending on where they set up camp.
Well, that's half the reason I'm involved in them, because I started working on flying foxes when they became protected. And flying foxes are just fascinating because they're really long-distance flyers. They're all one population. It doesn't matter. Your singleton bats aren't singleton bats. They're actually more global than that. You could find a singleton bat in North Queensland now or down in Adelaide.
Wow.
We satellite tagged some bats in Melbourne and found them in Sydney in 2 days. They're tremendously mobile. And that's absolutely fascinating when you think about it. But their job in the ecosystem is that they move pollen and nectar and fruit around from all these little patches of rainforest that we've left and patches of bush that we've left in the landscape. They tie them together because they can transport seeds and pollen vast distances, so they keep the biodiversity up. So they're fascinating on a number of lines. Yeah.
I am going to have a whole new appreciation of sunset when I see the bats start to take off and fly overhead past my backyard, Karen. Lovely to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Karen Parry-Jones there. She is from the School of Life and Environmental Sciences at the University of Sydney, and she has been doing work for a number of years with, I'm not sure if we can call them our singleton flying fox anymore. They are global flying foxes that sometimes spend their times in Singleton.